In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Central Valley Sports Report. I am your host, Paul Metters. Here at First String Sports, Blackstone and Sierra Avenue, come down here to First String Sports. This is definitely the place to be from day one. They have been my sponsors. I've had every show here. I'm kicking back in the Letterman's Jacket Room. This is an incredible sight to see if you haven't been here before. Yeah, the Letterman's Jackets, they pop, man, and the logos and the color schemes and the fonts. Yeah, this is a great place. So if you haven't got your Letterman's jacket yet, come down here. If obviously when school starts back up in August, we're winding down the school year, got the whole summer, but if you're thinking about getting your Letterman's jacket and you haven't done it yet, get that done really, really soon so you have it for your kid for next year. We've got a fun show. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about high school sports. We're winding down. We're pretty much right in the middle of league play in softball and baseball. Track and field, I know, has a lot of events going on. Boys volleyball is in action as well. For the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking purely about high school sports. We had some tragic news a few days ago. Daryl LaMonica passed away. We're going to be talking about Daryl's legacy. Obviously, he was a Clovis High grad, the Oakland Raiders legend. We're going to be talking with George Takata, who's a friend of the show, about the legacy of Daryl LaMonica. George is a longtime Raiders fan, sportscaster for many years. He's had many conversations with Daryl LaMonica. So we're going to be talking about him and his legacy. Also, we've been chatting with Gabe Camarillo coming up after the break, after I talked to George. Gabe is producing the show, as always, does a phenomenal job. If you don't follow Gabe, follow him at Gabe Camarillo. We'll be chatting with him about all the goings-on out there in the Central section. At the bottom of this hour, we have our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week, Ryan Maddox, Clovis North softball. Talked a lot about her over this year. Clovis North has a phenomenal team this year. How phenomenal? Well, they're ranked number one in the state by Cal High Sports. They are undefeated, 17-0. They are number three in the nation, according to Max Press. Number three in the nation. So, and she is, she's the leading candidate, in my opinion, for Cal High Sports Softball Player of the Year. Her stats are absolutely amazing. I'll get into those when she comes on the show. But, yeah, Ryan Maddox is our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week. Look forward to talking with her. And then at hour number two, a little after 11 o'clock, a baseball name that everybody knows around here, Brian Marsubian, will be on the show. Brian is a Hoover High grad, played baseball at Reedley College, Fresno State. He was part of that 1988 team that was my favorite Fresno State baseball team of all time that went to the College World Series. He's been an assistant baseball coach at Buchanan for a lot of years, and he's synonymous with baseball around here. And he does Fresno State baseball games with Paul Leffler over the past few years as well. So that will be on hour number two. Two segments with Brian Marsubian. We'll talk about his career, talk about what it's like to coach at Buchanan. That's going to be a great conversation. We're going to bring in George Takata. George, are you there yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. I'm ready to roll.
All right, ready to rock and roll. Yeah, are you on assignment right now? Where you're hanging out somewhere, aren't you?
You can say that. I'm walking the Clovis Rodeo Parade with our mule packing team. And this is one of the other places to be today. The parade is packed and lots of people, and it's good to have the rodeo back after a couple of years with COVID not having it. So it's nice to be back out here.
So you are literally walking in the parade.
Literally walking, making sure our horses and mules don't go cuckoo over all the noises and stuff. Not like I could do anything about it, but I'm just taking pictures while they're walking along the 2.5 mile route. So it's been fun.
And you work at Reedley College, and so you're just helping out with that, right?
You know it. I take pictures, baby. You got to put it on Instagram, So we're proud to be part of it this year.
Sounds like a lot of fun. All right, so Daryl LaMonica, I mean, Clovis legend. I could go on. And I know you've had a tons of conversation with him over the years. We're going to get into that in just a minute. But when you heard the news of his passing, he passed away peacefully at his home at age 80. What was your initial reaction?
Just bummed out, surprised, because I thought, you know, he was a very healthy person for someone of his age. And when you lose someone like that, you're losing an incredible person in the community, someone who meant everything to Clovis. I mean, he would be an incredible grand marshal for this parade. I was thinking about him today, be like, oh, Daryl would just love this. You know, the Clovis High Marching Band is behind me. That's where he went to school, graduated in 1959 from there. And he would just be a proud Cougar today, just like he would be every day. So it was a shock to me. Really, really screwed up my day. Very disappointing, sad. But it gave me time to reflect on him and the fun times we had together.
Do you remember the first time that you met him? Were you nervous? Was it for a segment or anything like that?
Well, maybe. No, let's see. Well, it was we did a – Channel 47 did a Central Valley Greatest Athletes of the 20th Century, and he was one of them. And I got to interview him for that, Paul and I, Leffler. And it was just such an incredible opportunity. And there was just so much good tape and so much good interview stuff that we could have done a documentary on him, you know, because he kept talking about Clovis High and Notre Dame and being traded for Tom Flores from the Bills to the Raiders, two Central Valley icons getting traded for each other in the old AFL. And, you know, just and so many stories about Al Davis and John Madden and Brett Biletnikoff and Warren Wells and Art Powell. And but it always came back to the Central Valley and talking about his roots in Clovis, and that's really what he was all about. And he loved Raider Nation, but he truly, deep down in his heart, he was a true Clovis Cougar as well. And I think loved each equally, but maybe a little bit more. He loved those Cougars.
Talking with George Takata about Daryl LaMonica, and yeah, you're right, George. I mean, he was. It's pretty special that he was so friendly, first of all, and that, yep, you know, he loved his roots in Fresno Clovis. He was living here and retired here. And, you know, I tweeted out that picture of when Derek Carr and Daryl LaMonica met for the first time at Clovis West. And I just, you know, happened to snap that picture when they met. And that's just a great moment, you know, between those two as well. And I know Derek retweeted that, which is great. But how special is it for somebody like him just to really embrace his roots and embrace Clovis and love his high school?
Oh, it's extremely important because it just helps out the school. I mean, every time you see Daryl LaMonica, I mean, his name's on the stadium, maybe LaMonica Stadium. And then these kids now, well, they don't know who he is, really. You know, who is Mr. LaMonica? And now that he's passed, maybe, you know, the Clovis High students who didn't know who he was, or maybe some of the football players who didn't know who he was, they go, oh, that was him? He played for the Raiders? He's the Mad Bomber, the best nickname in all of sports, or in all of professional football, at least. So even though he's gone, it probably gives people at Clovis High and in our community a good chance to give a history lesson on how amazing this man is and what he did for our community and how much he loved Fresno and Clovis.
Clovis did a phenomenal job honoring him last night. Buchanan and Clovis had a baseball game at Clovis High, and the press box at the football stadium stayed lit. They had a nice blue tint to it, blue hue, and it stayed lit until 11 o'clock last night. So that was a very nice tribute. But, yeah, George, I have a couple just fun facts for people that don't realize his legacy. I just wanted to, you know, spend about 30 seconds or so just talking about Daryl. He played, fun fact here, he played in the very first Little League World Series. He lettered in four sports and was an All-State quarterback. In 1974, that's actually when the stadium was named LaMonica Stadium. And after high school, he turned down a professional baseball contract with the Chicago Cubs. Played at Notre Dame, like you said, was a starter for 3 years. And the Mad Palmer, you're right, is one of the greatest nicknames of all times. He led Raiders to four consecutive division titles in 67 through 70, Super Bowl appearance in Super Bowl II, twice named AFL Most Valuable Player. I mean, I could go on and on. Here's one last fun fact, George, before I ask you a couple stories that Daryl has shared with you. His winning percentage, and I'm sure you know this, is the second all-time for quarterbacks. 0.801, so basically an 80% winning percentage. The person right below him, a guy by the name of Tom Brady. So Daryl LeMonica has a better winning percentage as a quarterback in the regular season than Tom Brady.
And a member of the Fresno Athletic Hall of Fame and the new Clovis Unified Athletic Hall of Fame. And I had the pleasure of helping induct him into the Clovis Unified Athletic Hall of Fame, which was one of the moments of my career, to be able to do that, to build on just the legacy and talk about it some more and share with everybody at that event was just truly, truly awesome. So I'll always remember that.
What are some fun stories that Daryl shared with you that you can share with us?
Well, I mean, he shared a lot about Al Davis. He shared a lot about John Madden. You know, John Madden with the Raiders had just a couple simple rules, you know, be on time, and play like hell on Sunday. You can have fun, but don't forget the goal is to win football games. And Daryl once said, when he talked to John Madden about that, he said, John, you don't have to worry about me being wild off the field. I'll just win like hell for you on Sundays. That's all you got to worry about with me. A total family guy. He's been married for so long, and his son Brandon's been just as equally amazing. Really good stories about Coach Madden. Because Coach Madden was like, you know, do what you want, but just go ahead and be on time and win on Sundays. And Daryl's just like, you know, I'm just gonna hang out at the hotel and get a good night's sleep and go like hell on Sunday for you. So it was kind of a funny thing. And Daryl used to always talk with his hands. He was very, you know, his gestures and, you know, his eyes. There'd be a twinkle in his eyes when he talked about the Raiders and Al Davis and playing in Super Bowl II. And he even loved it when he talked about training camp. Oh, I just love getting sweaty and getting ready for the season and being with the guys again. And, you know, when you look at the old film, it's like he would talk about Fred Biletnikoff. And,
yeah,
you know, I would throw deep to everybody. I haven't threw deep to Fred Biletnikoff. That's like Derek Carr throwing deep to Hunter Renfrow. You wouldn't even think to do that. But if he wanted to throw it 40, 50 yards down the field all the time, you know, hence the nickname. And so he's just like, George, I just love throwing the deep ball. That's all I wanted to do, and that's all Al Davis really wanted me to do. And we did it, and we won, and it was the best time of my life. And so it was just great conversation.
And if you, again, go to my Twitter account, I retweeted pretty late last night a video. I think it was about 2 minutes long. Well, Twitter videos are usually about 2 minutes long, but just showcasing the highlights and a few interviews about Daryl. And you're right, he threw a pretty deep ball. And some of those passes were just right on the money. And it was also interesting to see the end zone because it had the goalpost right in the middle of the end zone right there, the old school end zone. But yeah, Daryl LeMonica, just, you know, a local legend, and his passing was definitely a surprise at age 80. I'll leave it with you, George. What are some final thoughts that you want to say about Daryl?
I wish there were more people like Daryl. You know, down to earth, family man, cares about his community, cares about his alma mater, gives back. You know, never forgets his roots. Always keeps in touch with his friends and wanted to, you know, continue his relationships with people after his career was over. Just a good, great people person. Always had a great attitude. Always was happy. Always was smiling and laughing and just gesturing with those hands and talking football. He's just a fun guy to be around. He was a pleasure to know. It was an honor to know him and get to know him throughout the years of my career. And, you know, if you can look back on someone's life and go, you know, that's a first-class quality human being right there, then it doesn't matter what you've done in life. And he's one of those guys who didn't even play football. I'd say the same things about him. You know, just wonderful, down-to-earth, and just truly, truly an awesome person. And we're going to miss him. I miss him dearly already. So I'm happy that all these tributes are coming out and people get to know him a little bit more after his passing, but truly we've lost a great one.
Well said, my friend, well said. Thank you very much. Keep marching that parade, man. Keep it
going.
Done,
man. I need some water. I get these horses and mules some water, and then I might dip my head in the trough as well. Shoot, it's hot out here.
All right, George Takata talking about Daryl LeMonica. Appreciate you as always.
Paul, thanks for the opportunity, man. I appreciate you.
All right, George Takata talking about Daryl LeMonica. Just a great man. George summed it up very, very well. Coming up after the break, talking with Gabe Camarillo about all the goings on in high school sports, recapping some things, looking forward to some things. Yeah, there's a little interesting thing that happened in between Clovis High and Central High in baseball. There was a forfeit there, a little bit of controversy. So we'll try to break that down the best we can here on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report here on 1430 ESPN. Just had a wonderful segment with George Takata talking about the legacy of Daryl LaMonica, and he hit it right on the money. You know, Daryl was a community guy, and he loved Clovis High School. The stadium's named after him, and he's been the master of ceremonies a few times at homecoming events, and I've seen him out there flipping the coin. So, yeah, just a great man. Is a huge loss for our community. If you want to go back and listen to any episodes of the Central Valley Sports Report or Off the Bench podcast, guys that have their own show from 2 to 4 here on 1430, you could go to the 1430 ESPN website. You could download all past episodes. You can listen to replays of the games that we do. We do a lot of high school baseball games. We did a softball game last week. We do the Clovis North and Clovis softball game. So you can go back and listen to any of those games if you want as well. Now's the time we talk to Gabe Camarillo. Gabe Camarillo writes for Barkboard. He produces my show, does a phenomenal job in the central section, keeping people up to date on scores and interviews as well. You can follow him at Gabe Camarillo. Has his own little blog on our 1430 ESPN website as well. With baseball rankings, he's going to be updating that as much as possible as well. So, yeah, Gabe, you know, you heard that about Daryl LaMonica and what a great man. And, you know, a lot of people forget, too, that he had a chance to play baseball as well. He's a four-sport guy at Clovis High. But speaking of baseball, Clovis High and Buchanan had quite a series this week. Now, remember that the track plays three games in 1 week, and that's a little controversial as well. Most schools play two games a week, but you got to play three in the track, so you got to definitely have some arms. And Buchanan swept Clovis. I think they won games 10-0 in game one, and then 6-5, and then yesterday was a 3-2 Buchanan win. But, man, that rivalry is certainly strong, and Buchanan just keeps rolling. They're the number three team in the state for a reason.
They are, and I was not surprised to see Clovis put up a fight, because it seems like whenever those two teams face each other, Clovis High elevates its level of play and rises to the occasion. But unfortunately for the Cougars, it wasn't enough to beat the Bears. The Bears are now 6-0 in track play. And about that rivalry part, Paul, I am definitely well aware of how much these two teams do not like each other. It was all over my Twitter mentions earlier this week because, you know, just you put something out there on Twitter and people see it, and if they don't like it, then they're going to reply to it. It's just basic Twitter knowledge, right? So, you know, there was some back and forth on Twitter, and that just to me showed me how fierce this rivalry still is. It doesn't matter that the players come and go, and there have been some great players in this rivalry. You're talking to me before this show, Paul, about the last time Clovis beat Buchanan was the 2017 Valley Championship game. And just think about who was in that game as well, right? Just think of all the past players, the past greats to be playing for Clovis High, McCarthy Tatum. Think about Buchanan High and the great players they've had come through recent years, Grant Gambrell, right, and Zach Presno. There's been a great crop of talent in this rivalry. It doesn't matter who comes, who goes. These two teams always seem to get the best out of each other, and it was three great games of baseball, especially the last two where Clovis High really push Buchanan to the limit, and maybe Buchanan come back late innings to get both of those last two wins.
Talk about how deep the rivalry is. You know, Buchanan's actually beat Clovis High 22 out of their last 23 in that 2017. Yeah, that was a big upset. That was a really good baseball game. You know, Buchanan had beat them four times during the season, and the one that really, really mattered, Clovis had their number. Going over the standings right now, Buchanan is sitting at 18-2. Like I said, ranked number three in the state, according to Cal High Sports. They sit at 6-0. Clovis West, I can't wait for that three-game matchup in a few weeks. Clovis West is at 5-1. Clovis is 3-3. Clovis North is 3-3. Clovis East is 1-5. And Central is 0-6. Now, Gabe, I teased a little bit about a little controversy, right, between Clovis High and Central. Central beat them. However, there was a protest regarding pitch count from a game before where one team had them at 32 pitches, and then the other team had them at 28 pitches. And he pitched the next game, and the rule is that you cannot pitch the day after you throw over 30 pitches. And got caught on the technicality, even though Central won the game on the field. Clovis won due to a forfeit, and that was ruled upon. Now, this is very important. That was ruled upon by the league. It wasn't ruled upon by CIF. So if anybody's blaming CIF for anything like that on this ruling, it wasn't ruled by them. It was ruled by the league. But, yeah, a little bit of controversy there, Gabe, and it's, to me, it brings up a lot of questions, like who is the official count? Well, it's got to be the home team. Who knew about the pitch count? I mean, a lot of questions rose from that, didn't it?
It really did. It was kind of a firestorm on Twitter. Speaking of, you know, battles on Twitter, that was the other battle. Besides Buchanan versus Clovis, it was Pitchgate, I think is what it was coined. And I think it is the home team's responsibility to have the pitch count available for their away team. But it's also the responsibility for both teams to compare scorebooks after every inning, if not after the game. You know, it's to me, a lack of communication is what caused this problem. If Clovis High and Central communicated after the first game, and in the second game, if Clovis High communicated to Central, okay, your guy's on the mound, he's not supposed to be on the mound because he pitched X amount yesterday, then, you know, that's another discussion. Now, if it was that Central had him and that he could only throw 30 and they let him go past it because of a batter, that's where technicalities come into play, because can you really pull a pitcher mid at bat if it's already over 30? I don't know. I don't know where that technically goes, and this is where I will admit, you know, I need to brush up on some of these rules about pitch counts and what a batter can do or what a pitcher can do in terms of if they can finish an at-bat because they're over 30, or if they do that, to stop in the middle of the at-bat and get a new pitcher to finish that at-bat. That's where I need to do some learning. But overall, it's hard to pick blame on either side, because on one hand, I see Central being rightfully upset because Clovis High did this 2 weeks after the game. But on the other hand, the league voted against Central. So obviously Clovis High isn't the only one that thought this was a problem. It was the entire league that thought this was a problem. So Central can't just point at Clovis High and say, you're the reason why we had a forfeit. They really have to point at the entire league, because they voted unanimously, I'm assuming it's unanimously, against Central.
Yeah, that brings up a lot of questions. You're right, Gabe. And yeah, one thing I think moving forward now is that teams are going to have to communicate a little bit better about pitch counts and where they're at, and make sure that it is official. Now, speaking of wins, so Clovis gets that win, and that could really help them in playoff seedings. And right now, you know, obviously Buchanan is tops, but I know that Stockdale is right there. They got a really good team. Bullard has got a really good team. Rigetti is up there as well. But remember that for baseball playoffs and softball as well, you go top eight for Division One, and then every division below that is 16. What's your opinion? Do you like this eight teams in Division One? Now, one of the things too, I'll be talking with Brian Marsubian about this, is that with eight teams, you only got to win three games to win a Central Section Championship. If you play in a full bracket, you got to win four games, and that's a big grind. Do you have a preference, Gabe? What do you like?
I think 12 teams would be ideal. I mean, 16 teams last year was awesome, but you also saw some crazy upsets, which makes it awesome, right? Number 15, San Luis Obispo upset number 2, San Joaquin Memorial. And I was sitting in the stands when Rigetti, the number 16 seed, had a lead going into the bottom of the 7th over number 1 Buchanan. So I guess the more teams you have in Division 1, the more likely there is for an upset and the crazier it can possibly get. I think you have to meet in the middle, though, because maybe Rigetti, who I think going into that game last year was on the 13-game losing streak, maybe they shouldn't have been in D1. But eight teams is too little, because you're going to have, according to our guy Victor Chabrin, who put out these projected rankings for baseball, you're going to have Ridgeview, Arroyo Grande, Frontier, Clovis North in Division 2. Those are four really good teams. Ridgeview's playing some great baseball right now. Arroyo Grande is as well. Frontier has two stud pitchers. And Clovis North is showing that they can hang with anybody. They beat Clovis West last week. Biggest Road Christian's also in D2. And I think they're also a really good squad with a couple of D1 commits that maybe they can be in D1. So the what I'm trying to get at here is there's a couple teams in Division 2 that have a solid argument to be in Division 1, but because of the 8-team bracket, they're going to be left out in Division 2, and they may be beating up on some smaller schools that make the bottom portion of the D2 bracket. So this is the first year we're going through it, so I don't want to, you know, come to a media decision without seeing how it is implemented in playoffs and seeing it actually in playoffs. But I will say, going into this, I'm not a fan of it. I wish there was a 12-team bracket, maybe give the top four teams a bye because they've earned it, and have those the seeds 5 through 12 battle it out. incorporate the 1-4 seeds. There's a better way to do it than just eight teams, because eight teams is too small.
Yeah, and obviously we don't have an open for baseball. Basketball, the open division, the central section has been four teams, and that might be abolished for next year. Might just go to a straight D1, no open division. We know what happened in girls basketball, where our open division game was a slaughter between Clovis West girls and who was it? Wasn't Rigetti? Was it?
It was Nopomo.
It's Nopomo, yeah. Oh, poor Nopomo. So yeah, I think we might. CIF might, again, it's going to go to a vote to the athletic directors. But, yeah, no open division for basketball, looks like, for next year, and obviously none for baseball and none for football. But, anyway, Gabe, you got a couple minutes here. I know it's never too early to talk about football, right? I know that spring football has—now, Clovis West is doing something called spring football. It's something that we have really never seen. And I think that, they're doing it because, Coach Brown is— trying to get his program to look like a college level program as far as their practice structure and whatnot. But Clovis West has some dudes, right? I know that Sanders just got a scholarship offer to Cal. But what are you hearing about this Clovis West spring football, and how cool is that?
Yeah, you hit it on the nail. Eric Brown's from UNLV. He's a college coach coming into Clovis West in his second year now underneath at the helm for the Golden Eagles. He's going to try and make this a college program. We've seen this before. I think, if you asked me last year, Buchanan resembled a college program in some ways because they were just so structured, so disciplined. Their practices were run to just such execution. Matt Giordano was a guy who learned under Tedford, went to Cal, and he's from the NFL. So obviously he had that structure. Now you're seeing the same structure with Eric Brown and his assistant coaches. And you talk about the assistant coaches, all of them are former head coaches like Lewis Franklin, Adam DaCosta. And this coaching staff is such a great group of talent. It almost matches the town you see on the field. And you're talking about Marshall Sanders getting a scholarship offer to Cal. Jordan Piero just recently got a rating from 24/7 Sports. He's a three-star. Landon Wright received a rating too. And these are all receivers for their upcoming junior quarterback, Tyler Patrick. Now, this does raise a question, right? Because I looked at the dates for the spring football. I don't know if Tyler Patrick's still going to be playing baseball during that time. So is he going to have to sit out this spring football? That's a question I guess I have to ask Coach Brown. But it's really cool to see Clovis West try this out. You're right, it hasn't been something I've seen so much. But with this new group of coaches in the track, you got Coach Wilkins taking over at Clovis High. Eric Brown's in his second year. You have Coach Wood at Buchanan and Coach Nagel at Clovis East. There's so much young coaches, so many new things going on in the track. Why not try this out if you're Clovis West? Because everything else in the track is new. I believe Eric Brown's now the second longest tenured coach in the track, even though he just joined the track last year. Is that right,
yeah,
Paul?
Yeah, three new head coaches, right?
Yeah, and Coach Jacob's the longest tenure now, I guess. So yeah. Who's missing? Yeah. Oh, Kyle Biggs. Obviously, Kyle Biggs. Yep. But in Clovis Unified, he's the second longest tenured coach.
That's awesome. Good stuff, Gabe. All right, I need to make a tiny bit of a correction. Max Preps didn't update their standings, and made a little bit of a mistake regarding baseball. So Clovis East last night beat Clovis North 16-2. So both of those teams are 2-4. Clovis North isn't 3-3, and Clovis East is not 1-5, like I said. So anyway, Gabe, good stuff as always. We're looking forward to next week. And, have a good rest of Saturday, my friend.
Absolutely. I might go see that rodeo parade. George made it sound really fun.
Yeah, he did. George Takata always. Yeah, he's always a fun guy to talk to. So coming up after the break, we have Ryan Maddox, Clovis North softball, our 1430 ESPN Student Athlete of the Week on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Had to wait till that song kicked a little bit. Queen. Here on the Central Valley Sports Report, I am your host, Paul Metters. Had a great talk with George Takata about Daryl LaMonica. Talked with Gabe Camarillo about all the good stuff that's happening in the Central section. And I didn't mention this at the beginning of the show, but I just want to thank all of you guys out there for your text and your comments and your messages to me about my father passing away a week and a half ago. I did the show 2 days after he passed, and it was definitely a bittersweet moment. My dad was in poor shape health wise. He had a stroke 4.5 years ago, So he lost his ability to speak and was paralyzed and all that stuff. So, you know, on one hand, that we know that he's in a better place, even though it hurts. So, anyway, I want to thank all you guys out there for those messages that you guys sent. It meant a lot to me. Yeah, it's very, very much appreciated. Now we got Ryan Maddox, our 1430 ESPN student athlete. We've talked about her a lot over the last month, especially here on the show. And there's good reason that we're doing that. It's these stats are absolutely mind-boggling. All right, I'm just going to read off a couple here, Ryan. I know you might be a little embarrassed by these, but these are nationally recognized stats. These are remarkable. She's 17-0 on the season. Clovis North is number one in the state by Cal High Sports, number three in the nation by Max Preps. So, pitching-wise, she has a 0.22 ERA. Her K-to-walk ratio is 193-14. 193 strikeouts to 14 walks in 95 and two-thirds innings. So, yep, that is a little bit over two strikeouts per inning. She only given up 23 hits. Yesterday, beat Central 4-0, right? Yeah. 18 strikeouts.
Yeah.
18 out of 21 outs. That's decent. Decent. okay, so not only does she pitch, but she hits. She's hitting .533, 25 runs scored, and three home runs. Just mind-boggling stats right there. Okay, so, Ryan, first of all, welcome to the show. We're so happy to have you here.
Thank you.
You are wearing one of the coolest jackets I've ever seen for a high school kid. All right, so can you explain what this jacket looks like? Maybe I'll kind of set up. It's like it's black. It's like the old school with the buttons, right? The buttons has like a silky satin look. But who made that? And what was the inspiration behind that jacket?
I'm not too sure. I just know I think 2 years ago, Kaylee Greeley's mom, she had one on, so I'd asked for one. It's got the CN softball logo on the left, and then what does it say? Broncos
it just
on
says
the
Broncos.
Back.
Yeah, yeah. In that baby blue. Those are sweet. How many of those have been made, do you think? How many of those are out there?
I know a few people on our team have them.
Okay.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
All right. I love it. Special edition. All right. So yesterday's game was an afternoon game. Do you like playing in the afternoons, or do you like playing under the lights?
Definitely under the lights.
Why is that?
I don't know. I feel like it's just more fun. A lot of more fans come to our games at night. And I feel like I just pitch better under the light.
I think you ask every baseball or softball player, obviously, you know, most football games, high school football games are played under the lights, but you'd say under the lights, there's just mm-hmm. something special about that. So when you have an afternoon game like that, what your game probably was like an hour and a half long. Where do you like to go out to eat? You go out with your family? You go out with some friends? What do you guys like to do?
Yeah. Last night we went to the baseball game and then after that we went to Fieldhouse with my teammates and my mom. But usually we'll go somewhere to eat. Usually Fieldhouse or 10 Tavern after our games.
Okay. All right. Good choice. How about last year? After you guys won the Valley Championship game, where did you go celebrate last year?
We went to Fieldhouse.
Fieldhouse getting a lot of pub here. Yeah, that's a good place to go. All right, so we broadcasted your game. It was Wednesday night against Clovis High. That was a big rivalry game. Obviously, Clovis High is one of the top programs in the Central Section as well. You played them in the championship game last year. I watched you warm up for a little bit right there on the side. Obviously, I'm not going to bother you during warm-ups or anything like that. I think Coach Dale would have probably kicked me out or something. But what is your routine before a game? Do you have anything that you have to do before every game? How many warm-up pitches do you like to throw in the bullpen? What's that look like?
It's not too much. I kind of get in there, and I just try to see what's working and maybe what's not. You know, maybe just five or six of each pitch. There's nothing special I do before the game, but my warm-up only takes me like 10 to 15 minutes.
Do you have any superstitions, I guess I should say? Do you step over the line? Do you do anything before the first pitch of the game? Is there anything that you do, or you just grab the ball and go?
Before every inning, my coach, Rainey Brown, give her a handshake before I would go out to the mound. It's kind of our thing.
Rainey Brown, you know who Rainey Brown's father is?
Yeah.
Tim Thiessen?
Yeah.
Yeah, Tim's a big guy. He was on my show a few weeks ago. Tim's a great guy. So, yeah, Rainey Brown, really good softball player at Clovis West, I believe, and now she's a coach at Clovis North. All right, so you got – obviously you are a star pitcher, but you got to give a lot of credit to your catcher, don't you?
Yeah.
So sure. What? Talk about your relationship with your catcher, with Cam.
You know, Cam's great behind the plate. She's really easygoing. You know, we work well together. She's very positive with me, and, you know, if something's off, we just communicate. But she works hard to get pitches and block the ball behind the plate.
Coach Dale call pitches?
Yes.
So what is your favorite, and I'm really excited about this next part that I want to talk to you about. What is your favorite pitch that you like to throw?
It's probably been the drop ball this year, kind of an off-speed drop. I didn't throw it last year. It's a new pitch for me, but it gets them to swing and miss the most and keep them off balance, so it's really fun to throw.
When did you start learning that pitch? When did you start tinkering with that pitch? In the summer? Last summer?
Yeah, probably last summer a little bit.
Okay, so I'm holding a softball here. All right, and I'm excited because I want you to show me first of all, I want you to tell me how many pitches you throw, the different types of pitches, and obviously we're on radio right now. I got my Facebook Live going on, but, you know, I'll describe it the best I can, and you can as well, but first of all, what are your pitches that you throw, and then why don't you show me the different grips that you have?
So I throw changeup, drop, rise, curve, and screw. So the changeup and the drop are both just normal hold, three fingers, and then the curve, screw, and the rise are all like this.
Okay, so again, I need to mention that Ryan is left-handed. All right, mm-hmm. So she has that advantage. So it looks like, so what grip is that again?
Curve, screw, and rise.
Okay, so three pitches, and it looks like she's given like the okay sign. Fingers aren't quite touching there, and then the other three are pretty spread out across the ball there. And looks like it's with the seams, right?
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about that screwball. So how many times did you throw that against Clovis? Because when I saw that pitch, I'm like, that thing's unhittable, that screwball, right? So how many times do you think you threw that in the game? Maybe 10, 15?
Yeah, it's to the outside corner usually. So I probably throw more curveballs, but it's definitely, I feel like they don't expect it coming because I don't throw it as much, but when I do, and the umpire calls it a strike,
yeah.
It's pretty good.
That is a wipeout pitch. So, again, you're left-handed, you throw that to a right-handed hitter. If that thing starts on the outside part of the plate, that thing is diving across the plate there. All right, so rise ball. All right, how are you gripping that thing?
Oh, same thing, the C.
Okay, so that's the thing. And then, so when are you changing then the trajectory of your arm, right? Is that how it is, or are you changing your wrist to make it a screwball or a rise ball? Because you said you have the same grip. So when do you flick it a different way
for a rise ball? Kind of just come under, and then your hand angle changes to up or to the left or to the right for a curve.
Got it. Okay. And then so you have five pitches? You don't call one a fastball. I didn't hear fastball in there, right? There's no fastball in softball, right?
Yeah.
You're always making the ball move. Is there, again, we asked you about your favorite pitch, but what pitch do you think you're going to have to throw a lot at the next level? I didn't mention that, but you're committed to University of Arizona. But what pitch do you think you really have to develop at the next level to get those D1 hitters out?
Definitely the off-speed or a changeup is the most important. You know, you can throw hard all you want, but something to keep them off balance is really important, you know, for strikeouts, most importantly.
And those pitches, again, if you are ever at a high-level softball game, you're going to be amazed at just the skill level of these girls, and, you know, especially Ryan Maddox here, who's absolutely tearing it up. I want you to give a shout out to some of your other teammates, because obviously it's, you know, you're the pitcher, but you got some teammates behind you, and you know, you don't win 0-0. You got to put runs on the board as well. So who are some of the other stars on your team? Some of the other girls.
You know, me and Nalea, we try to get on base, the 1-2, whether it's hitting or bunting, and
she plays, is she shortstop?
Yes. Yeah. And then Kaylee, Greeley, Emma Bumate, and Alexis all hit us in. you know, Alexis has 9 home runs, and Kaylee and Boom hit a lot of doubles to bring in the runs. So
I think Alexis, did she hit another one yesterday?
Yeah.
That was her 9th home run. So Alexis DeBoer, Coach Kaylin DeBoer's daughter, and she's only a sophomore. She's ranked pretty high in the nation as far as rankings for her class. But do you feel like as a hitter, you're a table setter as well, right? How many stolen? You got a few stolen bases too, don't you?
Yeah, a few.
A few.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Let's say double digits. You stole one in that game Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So you know, at the next level, has Arizona told you that you're just going to be strictly a pitcher, or they say you might play a position too as well, or are you just going to pitch?
I'll definitely pitch there. I kind of have the option for hitting. I don't know what's going to happen yet, but we'll see as it comes closer.
And normally, do pitchers hit at Division I level as well, or it just depends on how good they are, right?
Yeah, there's not a lot that hit at the D1 level, but, you know, anything can happen.
I want to talk about your competitiveness. So, you know, we broadcasted the game. I got to watch you pitch for the first time this year. Clovis got those 2 runs in that 6th inning, and you had only given up 1 all year, coming in 81, a little over 81 innings. And you weren't too happy with that, were you? I mean, you're very competitive. Talk about the competitiveness that Coach Dale has helped, you know, have you been competitive your whole life, or how has Coach Dale helped you with your competitiveness?
Yeah, I know she was really competitive. She still is when she throws BP trying to get us out. But she's taught me to be, like, very humble with it, but also be competitive. And, you know, on the mound, if something's, you know, not going my way, or just to stay in it, focus on the next batter, and just fight for my teammates.
That's big. Yeah, Coach, talking with Ryan Mattis of Clovis North. Do you know, you mentioned how Coach Dale is, you know, pitching you guys batting practice, but do you know how good she was?
Yeah.
You do? Okay. Yeah. In high school, Bullard legend, UCLA legend, All-American, Pac-10 pitcher of the year. Have you seen clips of her pitch on YouTube or anything?
Yeah, I have. Yeah.
Is there some similarities between you and her?
She definitely threw the ball a lot harder than I did. So, Adam, I'm also much shorter, so it's kind of different.
Yeah. Let's go back a little bit to growing up. You have 3 sisters, don't you?
Yeah.
You're the oldest?
No, I have an older sister.
You have an older sister. Did you start off athletically, like playing soccer, or did you, you know, play in the little 5-year-old soccer league, or when did you first start playing softball?
I played t-ball. I did play soccer when I was younger too. And then I was left-handed, so my parents put me in pitching and tried to find the best pitching coach for me. So I think I started working with Coach Dale when I was like 7 or 8, and then I've been working with her ever since.
So when you were 7 or 8, did you take an initial liking to pitching, or was it an adjustment? You're like, man, I really, really enjoy it.
Yeah, I did like it. It was really hard at first. I couldn't even make it to the catcher, to the plate. So, but I worked hard, and I'm where I'm at today. So,
did you you remember any times when your competitiveness got the best of you, where you had to really, somebody had to settle you down, or are you just able to settle yourself down?
Oh, when I was younger, I used to cry a lot when I would give up like runs or hits. But as I got older, I figured out that it was okay to fail and do that stuff. So,
when you guys as a team, you know, we mentioned you guys are number 1 in the state, number 3 in the nation, and I did talk to Coach Dale before your softball game, and I asked this question, and I'll ask you too, like, do you guys look at any of that stuff? Obviously, you're well aware of how good of a team you are and your record, but how are you able to focus on, you know, every game, every inning, and every pitch? You just got to put all that stuff to the side and just focus?
Yeah, we do not think about that stuff, like, at practice. You know, we have a lot of good teams in our track and in our central section, so anything can happen. So we just focus on the next game.
And your road to being offered by University of Arizona and then accepting that invitation, who else recruited you? What other schools were talking with you?
I had some phone calls on September 1st, and then I also visited Northwestern after I visited Arizona. But I knew Arizona, after, when I was making my decision, I knew it was the best spot for me.
When did you know that, or why? What attracted you so much to that program?
I love the city of Tucson and their fans, and the coaches are amazing. And I got along with the players really well, and they just made it like home.
So you made an official trip?
Yes.
There, when you remember when that was?
Mid-September.
Mid-September. So they were they running a practice or anything like that? Were they doing fall ball?
Yeah, they did have a little bit of a practice. They couldn't practice fully yet, I don't think.
Yeah.
But they did some hitting and stuff.
Okay. You watch baseball at all?
A little bit.
A little bit?
Yeah.
Who are your favorite pro teams? Do you have a football team or an NBA team or a baseball team you root for?
The Cubs for baseball. My dad is a Cubs fan, so growing up, you know, I went to some games. So,
when they come to California, have you ever been to Chicago for games?
I've been to Chicago one time. We just were outside the stadium at Wrigley, but they're playing the Cardinals then.
Okay. So a couple more questions here, talking with Ryan Maddox, Clovis North softball. What do you plan on studying in college? You got a specific field?
Yeah, I think in the medical field. Not too sure yet. Maybe want to be a PA or, that's my option right now.
All right. What are your favorite classes in high school? Do you have a favorite class or a favorite teacher?
RPE class with Van Holscher.
He's the wrestling coach, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's always fun, but not the academic ones.
All right, Ryan, just congratulations on the year that you've had so far. It's amazing watching you pitch. You're a dynamo out there. And again, I think you deserve all the accolades that you've gotten so far and all the accolades. And you're still only a junior. You got one more year. So thank you for coming on. Good luck the rest of the way.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Ryan Maddox, Clovis North softball. Yeah, undefeated, ranked high. Again, go check out some of their games. They are a lot of fun to watch. Coming up after the break, we're going to be talking with Buchanan assistant baseball coach, former Fresno State baseball player Brian Marsubian on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
In a world where high school sports don't exist. Wait, no. We don't like that world. Different world, please. Ah, that's better. The Central Valley Sports Report starts now.
Good morning and welcome to hour number two of the Central Valley Sports Report with Paul Metters. And that's me, your host, Paul Metters, here at First String Sports, corner of Blackstone and Sierra Avenue. Come down here, check it out. Spring has sprung. It's like we're going to have really good weather again this week after a couple days of rain, kind of strange rain that to me popped out of nowhere. I think it was 50% at the beginning of the week, and yeah, it came pretty steadily for a couple days there. Just had a great conversation with Ryan Maddox. Man, what a pitcher. Those statistics that she's put up this year are otherworldly. I mean, was it 193 to like 14 walk K to walk ratio? She gave up two runs against Clovis, which was double the whole amount that she's given up all year. She'd given up one run before that Clovis game. But, yeah, just incredible story. And, yeah, again, if you haven't seen a high-level softball game, go check it out. All right. I have one of my friends here, Brian Marsubian. Buchanan baseball. It's funny when Brian walks in. Brian's got a connection with everybody, right? Ryan Maddox is here, softball pitcher. Yeah, I coached your uncle. Yeah, I coach, you know, I coach this person, I coach that person. You
coach your uncle, coach his her nephew.
crazy world here. The connection with the Central Section and sports, I mean, just runs absolutely deep. So Brian has been coaching at Buchanan for how long? I didn't write that down. How long have you been?
I think 14 years.
14 years?
Yeah.
Played at Hoover High, Reedley College, of course, Fresno State. We're going to be getting into some fun Fresno State stories. You're part of that 88 team. It's my favorite Fresno State baseball team. My favorite Fresno State team, football, basketball, anything of all time. Yeah, we're going to be getting into a lot of fun stuff. But, yeah, we were talking a little bit off air, Brian, with Ryan, just how tough it is to hit a softball. Guys don't know, right? Guys think, oh, it's softball, it's underhand. But they don't know how tough it is to hit an elite softball pitcher. guys would be smoked right now if they tried to hit off somebody like Ryan, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they'd have no chance. They would literally have no chance. If you put a baseball guy, and the baseball kids will probably be upset, but if you put a high school baseball player, and have them face Ryan,
yeah,
they'd have no chance. It's just a different game. The mound's closer. You know, in baseball, you have to, you know, you get your load done while the pitcher's, you know, delivering the ball. But in softball, if your load's not already done, you're in trouble.
The ball's on you so quick.
It's on you. And so I've had the opportunity to help out and coach a little bit of girls softball. The intensity level and how they go about their business is different. Guys think it's easy to face that kind of pitching. They literally would have no chance.
So baseball is 60 feet 6 inches, right? Softball is 43 feet.
I mean, they might be able to figure it out, you know, down the road. But if they faced her like, you know, hey, Ryan, let me face you.
Yeah.
No chance.
Yeah, we throw that screw ball that she threw, and then you throw a rise ball. You don't. Yeah. There's no rise ball in baseball. There's nothing like that.
No.
And that pitch is on you. There's no time to load, like you said, with softball. You're just rocking back, and then you're slinging that thing.
Yeah, you got to be ready to hit. You got to get and be quick to it, and then make a really quick decision. I mean, I think she talked about she has like 5 or 6 pitches.
Yeah.
Right, in baseball, you're facing a fastball, maybe curveball, changeup, maybe slider.
Yeah.
Most of those guys in high school could locate 2 of those pitches, they're going to be successful, right? But she sounds like she's able to locate all her pitches.
She is. Yeah. Unbelievable. What's your first of all, thank you. It's, 11 o'clock on a Saturday? You got Saturday off. There's no tournaments. There's nothing going on right now. What are your normal Saturdays look like after a long week of work and baseball?
I mean, it varies. Today was at my today we had an 8 o'clock team meeting, and then at 9 o'clock I was at my mom's. We were kind of cleaning out her house. We moved her into an assisted living facility, and so we're trying to just kind of clean up her house and get that all taken care of. But every weekend is different. Last weekend I was up, my daughter had her new son, so we were up in San Jose visiting her. So every weekend is
It varies. It's different. Yeah. Are you a big fix-it guy? Do you fix things around? Because I'm terrible at that stuff. I'm awful. I'm not a big fix-it guy. My lawn is in decent shape. You know, it goes back and forth. Are you work around the house? Are you a handy guy or not?
Tell everybody I'm a handy guy, but I'm not a handy guy. I'm really good with, like, picking up the phone and finding a handy guy.
Yeah, I got you. Or getting a text from, you know, from my wife, like, yeah, you know what, maybe you want to look into this. And I remember
I could power wash anything, though.
Okay.
Yeah.
You got one of those power washers?
Oh, yeah.
I remember when we bought our house, you do that inspection, right? You got the inspector, then takes you around the house and tells you, yeah, you got this wrong. You might want to fix this. I remember he went around, and I felt like the dumbest guy on the block because I knew absolutely. Yeah, you could take a number 5 coil wire. You could fix this here. Da, da, da. And he could have been lying to me the whole time, and I was just nodding like, yeah, okay, yeah. I'll get on that. But I had no chance.
Yeah. No, I got a brother that could do everything. So I just pick up the phone, call my brother.
That's good. Let's go back to your playing days at Hoover. I mean, baseball was pretty different back then, right? So it's obviously. You know, who's in your league, and, you know, was Bullard your big competition back then? Or, you know, what was baseball like back then?
Yeah, it was the MYL. It was Hoover, Bullard, McLean, Roosevelt, Fresno High.
Okay.
So the big, you know, I mean, I guess the guys back then, if you're asking me, you know, obviously Bullard had a dynasty going.
So what year again did you graduate?
I graduated in 83.
83.
But actually in 83, McLean won it. Mike Ross was the big stud over at McLean High School. He hit a 3-run homer to beat Bullard in the Valley Championship game. But Bullard was loaded. They had, you know, Lance Shevlett and Billy Bartels. And, you know, back then they had pretty much everybody. I mean, I could name off Rex Hudler, Randy Azador. I mean, it was, the list is long.
Back then did...
Edison had Tim McDonald, Ken Henry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Athletes,
yeah.
Back then, was it uncommon for guys to throw 90? I mean, what, you know, you talk about today, like, A couple years ago, it seemed like, especially in the track, you had a dude that could touch 90. But back then, was that pretty uncommon?
I think so. I think back then, everybody played, depending on what the season was, you played that sport. So you played football, you played basketball, you played baseball. And it's rare these days that you have athletes that play multiple sports. We do still have them. Those are the kind of kids that we want. But 90 miles, to go back to your question, 90 miles an hour, it was very rare. You know, it was mid-80s. If you faced somebody that was throwing 87, 88, that guy was bringing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What at Hoover, I'm thinking of the what the field looks like and what the mm-hmm. campus looks like. How the campus looked a lot different back then? Was the baseball field now?
Yeah, it is. Short porch in right, had the big monster in right field. They've redone it and made it nicer since I've been there as far as the facilities, but it's still the same dimensions. Had a great time at Hoover. Coach Alfroze he's the best. He's the best one of the best coaches and great humans that I've ever met. And I also had the opportunity to play for George Amachi, who back then everybody that was around the game of baseball knew George. George was he was at Hoover, but he helped everybody in the valley,
yeah.
Whether it be a college student, college player, a professional student, a professional baseball player. When those guys came back into town, everybody went and talked to George. Everybody went and worked with George. So it was very blessed to be able to have George in my life. You know, because it didn't matter if you were just an average high school player,
yeah.
Or a great one, he would work with you, right? And he didn't charge anybody. He just had that love, and that he was just a wonderful man.
Did you become a scout?
Yeah, he was a scout for a long time. Yeah.
Yeah. What position did you play? Did you play football?
I did play football.
Yeah, I remember that.
Played a little bit of basketball too.
Did you?
As a short guy, yeah.
Yeah, you get out there and mix it up a little bit on defense, or what? What was your deal in basketball?
I was no good. I was no good.
Okay, we'll just leave it.
Yeah, there. I had fun.
Okay, you had fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay, so you know. You're right. I know I'm a few years younger than you. I'm class 89. You're 83, but you just transition, man. So I played basketball, baseball. I didn't play football. So we work out basketball. Once basketball season ended, boom, you just went right into baseball. So yeah. That's how it was back then too.
Yeah, and I think kids are more sports specific. They have, you know, I think nutrition is a big part of it. Weightlifting is a big part of kids, you know, their ability to throw 90, and you know, there's a coach. Everybody has a coach for everything. They got a pitching yeah. coach, an infield coach, a hitting coach. You know, you name it. It's just a lot more out there for them.
What bat did you swing in high school?
Oh,
you remember?
Yeah, the Green Easton.
The Green Easton.
Yeah.
Didn't we only have two choices?
Yeah, there was the Black Magic Easton, and then the Green Easton.
That's it. Yep.
3330.
You were a 3330 guy. Yep. So was I. Yeah. And if anybody swung a 3430, you're like, yeah, that's yeah. the strongest guy on the team. I remember my senior year, coach, first day of practice, hey, I got some new bats. Okay, cool. Yeah. What do we get? Well, four Black Eastons.
That's it.
Two 3330s, a 3430, and a 3230 for the smaller guys,
that's
right?
It.
That's awesome. So you mentioned some dudes at Hoover. Around the valley in baseball, but yeah, what was football like Friday nights?
Friday night football was so much fun. I mean, it was that was probably one of the best part of high school was playing football. We used to mix it up with, I just remember, playing against Tim and Ken Henry, even JV, getting used to playing against those guys. They were just special athletes. I mean, Tim was unbelievable. There was a guy named Tim Harrington at McLean. The guy was insane. He would just walk up. And I just remember him walking up and down the field on the 50-yard line with the big McLean flag and then stick it in the 50-yard line. I'm like, this guy's crazy. We had some good games. It was yeah. a lot of fun.
And then after Hoover, you went and played at Reedley College for yeah. a year or two?
Yeah.
Before making it to Fresno
yeah,
State.
I went and played over there because Jack Hacker was yeah. a young coach. He just transferred or just came from San Diego State. And I was at least smart enough to know that I always wanted to go play at Fresno State. Len Bordet was at City College. There's a ton of kids going to City College to play baseball. And the one thing that I didn't make a good decision on was, you know, if you're going to go to a JC and play baseball to try to move on, you have to play. And if you're not going to play, you're at a JC level, your career is pretty much done. So I put myself in a spot to go to a program to where I knew I was going to play baseball. Coach Hacker did a really good job of recruiting Fresno at the time. So, you know, we had Kenny Crew and Dennis Springer and Reggie Henderson, and had a really good team. But the best part of it is I had an opportunity to go in there and play my freshman year, play my sophomore year, and then be able to go over to Fresno State.
You played shortstop, second base, middle?
Yeah, well, Jody Allen was there my freshman year. I played second base. Jody played shortstop, and then my sophomore.
Jack Hacker's a great man. I know. Yeah, he's very well respected in the baseball community. Yeah, Jack's a great guy. All right. So how did you make your way to Fresno State? Coach Bennett, you know, get you over there. He talked to you. Say, we got some spots. What did that look like?
Yeah. So that's a you know.
We got time.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Growing up, I would always go to Fresno State games. I would go and I'd watch. I'd ride my bike over there when I was like 13 or 14. I'd always go to practices, watch their practices. That's kind of how I fell in love with the game. Watching guys like Joe Xavier and Pete DeLena and Jim Rothford, and those guys actually took me in as a young man, just showing up to the game. I'd flip them balls when they take, you know, BP, and just then I'd end up going to every game. And so I always looked up to those guys, looked up to that program, watched how Coach Bennett went about his business. So as a young kid in the Valley, that's really the only place I wanted to go. So that was my whole goal. So going to a JC was to try to get over to Fresno State. I was average at best. So walking on, it didn't matter. There was like 100 kids. You wanted to try out, you could try out.
Yeah.
Right? He had four teams. He had the Bulldogs, the Red Dogs, the Blue Dogs, and the Guard Dogs. So we played every night. We played JCs every night. And so it was just an opportunity to be there. And then, you know, once you're there, you got to figure out a way to impress Coach Bennett and make the big team. So
what did you do right then? You must have done something right.
Yeah, I had a little skill. I could hit the baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a journey. It was fun. It was fun to make that team, that 88 team that you mentioned was pretty special.
Very, very special. Do you remember your first practice or your first game that you suited up? Were you just overcome with emotion, you know, putting on those stirrups for the first time? You remember anything like that at Fresno State?
No, I just remember. I remember the guys. I remember meeting the guys and just developing relationships with those guys. And then, you know, my mindset was always to just outwork people, right? Because I knew that, you know, just looking around, if you're able to evaluate talent, you realize, hey, this is different than high school. This is different than Division or JC baseball. I mean, these guys are really good. And so to be able to make that squad and to get noticed, you had to, at least for me, I had to go about my business every single day in practice, like just try to outwork everybody.
Talking with Brian Marsubian, we've got about 4 or 5 minutes before the break, and I definitely want to get into talking about Fresno State stories, and especially that year. How did you find out you made the team? Was it listed on a locker room somewhere? Do you remember that?
Yeah,
remember that
it was
moment?
Listed at, on right outside Coach Bennett's office. So you had to, you know, back then his office was on the concourse, but right behind home plate at Biden Field, and so you had to make the walk from your car to his office to check the list.
Did you do it by yourself? You're like, I'm not.
You know what? I think there was a couple guys. I didn't go with anybody, but I mean, there's a couple guys walking up when I was walking up. Sure.
Yeah. Oh God. And do you remember what you did? Did you like do a little fist pump or anything when you saw
Yeah, I mean, it was exciting. I mean, it was a lifelong dream to be able to play there and to make that roster. So, yeah. But then you had to make the six-minute mile to get on.
I've heard stories. Stories about the six-minute mile. So explain to everybody what that's like and the grind for that. Because, yeah, I've heard some stories. So what's your story with that?
Well, the six-minute mile was run at 6 o'clock in the morning. And it was over, at the track over at Fresno State. And if you didn't make it, you had to run it every day until you made it. So first year I didn't make it, which, if you're not going to if you don't make it on day one, you're certainly not going to make it on day two.
Well, you said first year I didn't make it. You didn't say first day or first week.
Yeah. So the first year I didn't make it. So what happens after the first day is, because Coach Bennett's there the first day with all the coaches, and then the guys that don't make it, you're there with Coach Rupsage and Coach Payton. And those guys didn't want to get up at 6 o'clock every single morning, right? So after about, two or three days, they would just come back and tell Coach Bennett, hey, they made it. I mean, there were some catchers that were coming in at 8 minutes, 9 minutes, 10 minutes, and then, those guys would come back and say, oh, they made it. Coach would just look at him like, oh,
okay. Okay. I get you. All right, sure.
But I did make it, though, the second year.
Okay, second year, like what, 5:49?
So this, I'm just going to date myself. I had a cassette tape. I made a cassette tape that was 6 minutes long, and then I got my car and I drove a mile. So I knew when the cassette tape ended, if I didn't make that mile, then I need to keep. So I had to practice it. I had to run every day until I think I came in at like 5:58.
Okay. What was on the cassette tape? Do you remember? You got a little maybe.
Yeah, I had a little Michael Jackson on there. I did have a rap from Tommy Goodwin that he made me. Yeah. Yeah. So, but it ended right at 6 minutes.
So you knew. Yeah. All right. We only got another minute before break, but we're going to definitely come back and talk a little bit more about your time at Fresno State. But that 88 team, let me throw down a couple stats. We talk about Ryan Maddox's stats. That seemed unbelievable. Fresno State put up some amazing stats that year. A 32-game winning streak where you guys didn't lose for 2 months. 56 wins on the season. Obviously, you made it to the College World Series. I think, 350-something as a team? That sound about right? I'm doing this off the top of my head.
What do you mean?
As a team. Team batting average.
Oh.
350, 360, you remember?
Yeah.
Something stupid.
Something ridiculous.
All right, so right now, and when you think about that team, what pops into your head? Relationships, right?
Yeah, the relationships that I still have with those guys today. The year was, Coach Bennett's practices were no joke. But that year, we won so many. We just won so often that we pretty much dictated what we wanted to do, which is unbelievable. Right, so pretty much every practice that we had was a night practice, and it was just BP. So it was a good year. The year before that, there was a lot of running and a lot of stuff going on that year. But the 88 year was pretty much a breeze of practice.
Well, when you're putting up the stats, when you got three first rounders on the team, you're definitely gonna, you're gonna run practices and do the things to your strength. All right, Soups, you ready for another segment after this?
Sure.
There's tons of stuff we didn't even get into yet. So
yeah.
Talking with Brian Marsubian, former Fresno State baseball player, talk a little bit more about his time at Fresno State, his current coaching gig right now, and much, much more coming up on the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. Welcome back to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN. I am your host, Paul Metters, talking with Brian Marsubian. Brian, that song could have been on your six-minute highlight or six-minute tape that you had the time to run your six-minute mile at Fresno State. Maybe.
Yeah, it might have been.
All right, just reminiscing off air about that 88 baseball team at Fresno State that Brian was a part of, and I definitely want to get in a lot of memories because that's just such a fun team. And yeah, I know the 2008 Fresno State baseball team was really special, but that, 20 years before that, 88 team was really good. I want to talk to you about Coach Bennett. I know we had Coach Bennett Day a couple Sundays ago. Just what he meant to you. I know he meant a lot to you. I know he's a very special man in your heart. But, I mean, what did he mean to you personally?
Well, so much. Just as a young man, just as a 13, 14-year-old young man growing up in the Valley, to be able to be a part of his program just in a little way, just being around the program, being around the guys, him allowing me to do that, probably didn't even know my name, but just a kid that would show up on his bike every day and roll over to Biden Field, the old Biden Field, and allow me to be a part of that. And then, you know, just to watch him as a, you know, go through his program as a player, and watch how he went about his business, how he, how disciplined he was, how his practice schedules were, how disciplined those were, teaching the game, the fundamentals of the game, how important that was, how much I learned from him on that, and then able to coach with him for a couple years,
yeah.
And just see the other side of him, see the personal side of him, the character of the man, his sense of humor, you know, because as a player and as a young man looking at him, it was kind of just this big mythical legendary figure, and then to be able to coach with him and really see the human side of him, I was just very lucky and blessed to be able to do that, for sure.
I went to one, I'm sure he probably did this in front of you guys too. I went to one coaching clinic that he put on, and he was a big pitching guy, right? He's left-handed, right?
No, righty.
He was right. Okay, but he had this little comedy bit where he'd make fun of left-handed pitchers. You know what I'm talking? I don't know if he ever. So he'd say, "Yeah, it seems like every team had this goofy left-handed pitcher where his cap would be on side, he'd be, you know, soaking wet, 155 pounds, and throw a little goofball like this, right?" And just some of those fun stories.
No, his sense of humor, no one really got to see it, but he was always joking around, always having a good time, especially in '88. But was more so, I got to see it in '89 and '90 when I was coaching with him and traveling with him and having coaching meetings with him and stuff like that. So, and then after that, when he retired, just being able to call him, ask him questions about coaching, what he would do in this situation, what would he say to this kid in this situation, always available when I called, you know. So I was just very blessed to have him in my life, for sure.
And that 88 team, again, you got Tom Goodwin, you got Lance Shevlet and his 32 home runs. How many home runs did you and Lance combine with that year?
Yeah, I tell everybody talks about how many home runs Lance said. I said, combined, we hit 34 home runs.
And he had 32.
He had 32.
Of them. Who were your two against, and where were they at?
One was against George Washington at Biden Field. I can't remember who the other one was against. I really can't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did hit a triple against Minnesota that I thought was a home run in right center. It hit the capping. Thank God Coach Bennett got kicked out of that game.
Oh.
So he didn't see it because I was...
You hot-dogged it?
I hot-dogged it around first and then had to speed up to get to third.
He had got kicked out earlier, so...
If he would have saw me, like, jogging to first, I wouldn't have played the next game, that's for sure.
And then Tom Goodwin, I know he's a good friend of yours still. I mean, Tommy G was just a great guy, phenomenal baseball player, All-American, 62 stolen bases in one season. Tommy Goodwin, I mean, that's...
62.
62 in one college season.
Yeah, in 68 games. Literally every time he got on base, it was a triple. Like, if you walked him or he hit a single, he was stealing second and stealing third. And everybody knew it. And there was nothing anybody could do about it.
Were there some catchers that you know were just defeated, right? They wouldn't even try to throw?
Eddie Zosky hit second in that lineup. And, you know, to his credit, he took a lot of strikes. Right? I mean, it was a lot of fastball strikes because they had to throw fastball just to give him a chance to steal it. But even Eddie had a great season after that. I mean, he hit three whatever. Everybody hit three something.
Tommy made the Olympic team. Was it that year? 88 when he made
it? I think so.
I remember, he hit leadoff for that team, but I remember stories that, you know, Tom would just hit a routine single that most outfielders thought would be a single, and then he'd be standing on second base. Like, it was just amazing.
He'd hit ground balls to the second baseman and beat him out. If he hit a ground ball to the left side, he was safe. I mean, that's how ridiculously fast he was.
And Steve Hosey.
Steve Hosey. Steve Hosey had 108 hits that year, and I think it was third on the team. Think about that.
When you guys would go into a series or a single game, I guess you mentioned that, you know, Texas A&M came here and you guys played Cal, and then the USC games are legendary. Was just talk about the confidence level. Like, you just know that other team's going to have to play a really, 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 really good baseball team to beat us today.
Yeah, I mean, our confidence level was that we just knew we were going to win every game. We'd write the score in the dirt by their dugout before the game would start. Like, today we're going to win 15-2, or we'd write 14-6. I mean, we knew we were going to win. That's how confident we were, and that's how good we were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who was the biggest jokester and prankster on that team? Some guys really cut it up.
I mean, Steve Vondran comes to mind. I mean, he had super talent. He had probably one of the quickest hands I've ever seen, but he kept everything loose. We both kept everything loose.
You say we?
Yeah. We had a good time.
Is there a story that you can say, some fun story that happened that season you can say on air?
Well, one of the things that happened, there were two outhouses down the left field line that we used to go to the restroom. And one game, Steve and I were in the outhouse going to the restroom before the game started. The national anthem started. So we stopped, took our hats off in the outhouse. And then when the national anthem was over, we came out. And we won that night. It was early in the season. So that was our routine.
Oh.
We, you know, superstitious, but I make sure that we did that every game.
Coach Bennett, no?
He had no idea.
So then you got into coaching really quick after that, right?
Yeah.
So graduate in 88, and then did Coach Bennett just say, hey, you got an opportunity, you know, I think you have potential as a coach, or how did that go about?
Yeah, he asked me to – he knew I was going to get my master's and wanted to go into coaching, and he asked me if I'd want to stick around and be a grad assistant coach, which obviously I was honored to do that and was, like, super lucky to have that opportunity. That was 2 years that really helped me – understand more about the game and how to coach and how to go about your business, and just extra time with him, extra time with Coach Rupsage, extra time with Coach Payton, just to be behind the scenes and listen to how practices are set up and talking about players and, you know, just all the things that go into coaching and trying to make a team successful and players successful. Yeah.
Talking with Brian Marsubian. Did you coach first base? Did you get to go out there and coach?
I sat next to Coach Bennett and didn't move and just listened to everything. Everything he said, everything that he would talk to me during a game. I was just a sponge sitting next to him. He'd sit all the way in the far end of the dugout in his chair with his legs crossed, and the only time he ever got up was for a home run. He'd walk to the front of the dugout, give the guy a little high five, and he'd go back to his dugout, and he would be in his spot every single time. So I was literally right next to him.
Did anybody mess with his chair? Was that off limits?
No.
What was the deal with that?
No, no one touched his chair.
Not even. What might happen?
It wasn't even an option, to be honest with you.
So from then, did you get right into coaching high school? I know you mentioned you coached softball. You coached a bunch of different things. So what was the timeline as far as your coaching? I'm sure you got a lot of stops. But
so after, you know, I was getting my master's, and during that time I got married in 1990. And so I had to I had to start making some money. So I started working in the off season. I did some baseball camps, but then I got a job and got married, started having kids. And so when I started going to work, I realized, hey, I have to make a living here. And so that I kind of put baseball off the side for a while, started my professional career. And then I kind of got back into it in Little League, to be honest with you. Jeff Negrete and Scott Buss asked me to coach over at River Park, which was fun. It was, two guys that, you know, Jeff Negrete, who played for Coach Sweeney, and Scott, obviously, who was an All-American at Fresno State. I mean, they ran that practice. We ran Little League practice like we did at Fresno State, which was an eye-opening for me. I was like, hey, we're going to go out here and coach a bunch of 10-year-olds and 12-year-olds and have a great time. And the practices were formulated just how Coach Bennett had them, and we got after it. It was a lot of fun. So I think I did that for like 6 years. And then TD, Tom Donald, called me and asked me to see if I, you know, he had asked me a few years to come over and I came over in 2009 because my daughter was a senior that year and I knew all the boys.
Yeah.
So in my mind, I thought, I'll go over there for a year and coach these boys. And it just became just fell in love with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kept coming back. Have you ever had the itch to have your own program? Or are you just perfectly happy where you are?
I don't. I see what goes into it, and the time that goes into it. And those guys need to be on campus, and you need to have that relationship with those players every single day, outside of the baseball field. I think to be successful, so I've just been able to be around. I've been being all around, even. You know, you go from Hal Froese and George Amachi, and then you go to Coach Bennett. I was even able to be around Coach Biden for a while, and then Coach Hacker, and even Jeff and Scott, to be able to take some of that knowledge, and then be a part of Buchanan and Coach Donald and how he went about his business and. Great motivator of young men to be able to watch that and learn from that, and then now with Coach Fonts and Brad, and be able to take how he goes about his business and the fundamentals of all that, and then a few years with Jason and his knowledge as far as infield play. So I've literally stolen pretty much been able to take all that knowledge of all those great coaches that I've been around who have coached me, who've mentored me. And take that and be able to, invest and spread my knowledge through that as well.
And you've probably seen too, Brian, the, for lack of a better word, the evolution of the mindset of a high school baseball player, right? We talked a little bit about, growing up in the 80s, we had two styles of bats, and you just played ball, or you played the next sport, and then you get to Fresno State, and then you watch Coach Bennett. Then you coach Little League, and now you've been around the high school game for a long time. How are you able to find that balance, right, in high school kids, right? It's not D1, where it's more of a business, and you got a lot of dudes. It's obviously not pro ball. So how are you able to get to balance that between, the heart of a high school student and what they're going through in that time and how old they are to being a really good baseball player, right? Or a team, and how are you able to balance that?
That's a good question. I think times have changed in regards to how we grew up, to how kids are growing up today. And so, there's a lot of social media, there's a lot of travel ball, there's a lot of other distractions and different things. And guys are, when we grew up, we were coached by one guy. Right, and that's how you went about your business. Now you have kids that are being coached up by could be 10, 20 different coaches on any given calendar year, right? And so when they get to our program, when they get back to us, then, you know, there's a way, there's a certain way about how we go about our business. Yeah. And sometimes it takes a little bit of time to get them refocused on this is how we're going to go about our business. And you know, kids are kids will conform to their coaching staff and how they're coached.
Yeah.
They know what they could do, what they can get away with, and they know what they can't get away with. They know this is how we're going to go about it. So
I think when it comes down to it, you know, I'm a teacher as well. Kids actually, they want structure, whether they 100%. Say it or not. And 100%. They need it, obviously. But they want structure. They want to be coached. And when you can get that, you know, the heart and the ability to connect with each other, you got a pretty good, you know, you got a pretty good team, and they're bought in, and that's pretty special. You still throwing a lot of BP?
I do.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How many bullets you got left? You still got it going on?
I don't know. As long as Spock's open and I keep getting cortisone shots, we're good. I think we're good.
How many BP practice pitches do you think you've thrown in your career?
I have no
Six
idea.
Figures?
Oh, yeah, at least.
100,000 pitches in your – yeah. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, when I first got to Buchanan, those kids, they used to have to wear helmets because I had no idea where the ball's going. Now I'm getting better.
You're getting better.
Maybe because my velocity's getting slower. So
okay. Yeah. All right. We talked a little bit about, you know, the heart of a high school kid. How are you guys able to, you know, you guys have a target on your back. Let's just be honest. You guys have been one of the premier programs for a while, some national championships, national number ones in, 16 and 2011. You know, you guys won Central Section Championship last year. How are you guys able to really just focus on the game? How are you able to preach that to the baseball players of Buchanan?
I think we just go about our business. I don't think we listen to the outside noise. There's a lot on social media. There's a lot of things being said, and I don't think that we really pay attention to it. We go about our business. I could tell you I have no clue where we're ranked. I don't think it matters. I don't think really any of that stuff matters until the last game of the season. So we show up every day. It's all about the program. It's about the team and how we go about our business and what's expected of them on a daily basis, right? We have a practice plan, a practice schedule, and we try to treat everybody the same.
Yeah.
Right? And so everybody knows what they're expected to do every single day.
And I've seen that. I've seen a star player, and obviously I'm not going to say a name, years back, I've seen a star player pulled from the middle of the game for not running out of ground ball.
Yeah.
Right, so that's the expectations that you guys have. Is it? You obviously have coached a lot of really good players and seen a lot of really good teams. What's something though about high school baseball that you wish people understood out there?
That they're kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they're just young men. They're 15, 16-year-old, 17-year-old boys that are learning the game, that don't have it all figured out, that are going to make mistakes. It's a game of failure, right? It's the only game that's set up to fail. And a lot of people don't understand that. Even kids that are going through it, it's hard for them to understand to fail as much as they fail. Right, I mean, if you're a quarterback and you throw 10 passes and you complete 3 of them, you're terrible, right? And if you're a basketball player and you take 10 shots and you make 3 of them, you're terrible. But in baseball, if you have 10 at bats and you get 3 hits, you're pretty good, right? And so the game is just set up for failure. And I think as these kids go through their high school career, that's our job, to teach them how to learn from their failures, and how to take those failures and turn them into positives. Kind of how life works, right? You're gonna have, especially in sales, right? You're gonna have a lot of no's before you get yeses, and right. So you're gonna go through some things. So I would hope that people that go out and watch high school baseball games understand that these kids are just learning the game, and there's so much to it, right? It's not just catching the ball and throwing the ball, and so they're trying to learn. It's like a classroom. They're trying to get their GPA up. They're trying to get their baseball IQ up, and that's our job to teach them that. But it takes some time, right? And so it's one of the only sports where everybody in the stands thinks they know the game, right? And so, these kids are still trying to figure it out. And by the way, as coaches, you know, we make mistakes too. Just understand that it's a game of failure, and that all these programs are, you know, trying to do their best and try to navigate a very difficult game.
I agree. Well said. Talking with Brian Marsubi, we only got a couple more minutes here, and I want to hit on this, and I want to publicly thank you. You know, when my father passed away a week and a half ago, you reached out to me, and appreciate that. And you know, fathers are very important, and you know, you talked about the game and failure and talk about Coach Bennett, you know, a father figure to you. And I know you love your father as well, and he recently passed as well. But, you know, how important is fatherhood? And, you know, you're a father yourself. Your daughter just had a baby recently and visited her. So, you know, just talk about, you know, your father and fathers in general and how important they are in today's society. Mm. You know, loaded question.
Yeah, well, my dad was a huge part of my life. You know, I miss him every single day. And I know I'll miss him every day for the rest of my life. And I think that's because of the love that he gave me, right? It's the love that your dad gave you that'll live on, right? And I feel sorry for people that don't get to experience that kind of love from their father or their mother. Because I think you're able to pass that on, right? As you get older, you're able to pass that on to your children, I just think it's extremely important. I'm very blessed that I had that from my dad. You know, he didn't miss a game when I played. He didn't miss a game when I've coached, and so he was always there. And I think it's important. I just think it's important that you show up, you show the love, you do your best that you could. You know, he wasn't perfect. There's nobody that's walked this earth besides one man that's been perfect. And so, I could go on and on about my dad and how much I miss him. But I do know that I'll see him again, and you'll see your dad again, and so that's my faith. I don't know if we could talk about that, but you know, the Bible says that to be absent from the body is to be present with the Lord, and I know that I will see my dad again, and that's comforting. That's comforting. I miss him.
Yeah, good stuff. Great stuff. So, Brian, really appreciate you and coming on and two segments talking about baseball, the love that we had. You know, you got to play college ball, I didn't, and then you got to experience that 88 team. I got to experience through watching the team and reading through the papers of Fresno B. I remember, yeah, Lance Chamblet hits another homer.
I mean, every game, every day in the headline. Paper was a headline about Lance. Even when Lance went 0-for-4, you say Bulldogs win, even though Lance.
Despite Lance 0-for-4.
Yeah. There was a lot of great players on that team.
Lots of fun talking with you. Appreciate you as always. And, good stuff, my friend.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate it.
You bet. All right. Coming up after the break, I'm going to be wrapping this up. Thank you guys for listening to the Central Valley Sports Report on 1430 ESPN.
Carry on my wayward son. There'll be peace when you are done. Lay your weary head to rest. Don't you cry no more.
Show we had here on the Central Valley Sports Report at First String Sports on 1430 ESPN. Again, thank you to First String Sports. They've been an awesome and gracious sponsor and host throughout the years. Come on down here at Blackstone to Sierra Avenue. I want to thank you to George Takata talking about the great Daryl LaMonica. Thank you to Gabe Camarillo, Clovis North softball pitcher Ryan Maddox, state number one, Clovis North, and number three in the nation. And just had a great conversation with Brian Marsubian, Fresno State baseball player, former Fresno State baseball player, and current Buchanan assistant coach. Again, thank you guys very much for tuning in and listening. You can follow me at Paul Metters on Twitter. And in closing, be kind, be generous, be compassionate in everything that you do, and leave it all on the court. Talk to you guys soon.